Welcome to the Speaker's Corner Show. My name is Heiko Koo. This week's show is from my own meeting on Sunday, a humorous satirical look at the world's events around the credit crunch and the American elections. You can catch our previous shows on speakerscorner.net. That's speakerscorner.net. You can hear us every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on 104.4 Resonance FM, or you can join us at Speaker's Corner every Sunday afternoon between noon and dusk, a little bit after in this time of year.
There is no automatism to the process of a shift to the left in an economic crisis, which is actually obviously correct. The tendency would be, in many circumstances, that there would be a movement to the right. But actually, the key question is not a movement to the right or to the left, but the disappearance of the centre ground. That's the essence of the issue that takes place in a profound economic crisis. And this is essentially what we have to understand the process is. Whether there is a left or a right is determined by the historical conditions in the country, by its own, you know, tendencies and dynamics inherent in the existing situation prior to the economic collapse, and also in the strength and relation between the various class forces in society and the tendencies that they express themselves. So, for example, yesterday there was an election. You might have seen the results this morning in France, in the Socialist Party. And the left-wing candidate was elected by a small majority, a wafer-thin majority. But of course, this is considered to be a very negative thing by the newspapers. The Guardian couldn't even bring itself to publish a picture of the face of the winner. Instead, they published a picture of the face of the loser and declare there has been a bad result and there's cheating straight away. So they take sides straight away on an issue because they fear that this process of economic crisis will lead to a shift to the left inside the working class organisations, whether it be the trade unions or the political parties or even social, academic or other organisations. This tendency will be there to demand reform in the interests of the majority, because people have seen the way in which internationally capitalist governments and banks have been bailed out by direct intervention from the state on a global scale, coordinated intervention on a global scale to protect the interests of the very wealthiest layers of society. Those people who have plundered the resources and driven the economy to the edge of total collapse on a world scale, those people are the first people who internationally, the rulers of the world, gather together and protect through all types of measures that they could consider, measures which most people would have thought to be totally impossible only 6 months ago. And yet suddenly they're doing things like nationalizing banks and intervening and throwing hundreds of billions of pounds.
Not the car industry.
In each country, not only. I mean, in Germany, it was 500 billion, I believe it was euros. In Britain, 500 billion pounds. In America, it's actually not the Hank Paulson asked for 700 billion US dollars. Actually, it's 6 trillion US dollars really? That they've chucked in to protect Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, effectively. I mean, they've guaranteed this level of debt, which is around 25,000 US dollars per capita in the United States of America. So we get an idea of the scale, of the desperate scale of the crisis which we're about to enter. There was discussion this week about, in the United States, about nationalizing the car industry. Well, I think they will nationalize the car industry, because otherwise there'll be 3.5 million people unemployed relatively quickly. And from these 3.5 million people, connected with their economic activity and the productive economic activity of the car industry, one of the core industries in the history of the United States, modern capitalism, there will be around 10 million more jobs that would go if the car industry begins to go bankrupt, if they allow it to go bankrupt. And Obama, of course, his latest announcement is they're going to create 2.5 million jobs. Well, this will be a minor impact upon the total crisis that's about to hit. Now, how does the crisis? A lot of people, I feel, last few weeks I was speaking about it, people are going, you know, they're sort of listening to it, they've seen it on telly. A lot of people, they don't really understand. It's not difficult to understand, though. It's actually a very simple thing to understand. I can illustrate the whole process through my own personal experience. For example, a few years ago, I was given my first credit card. On that credit card, there was £4,500. And I was really proud because I remember when I was a kid, my mum and dad had a credit card, access card, and it was always a magical thing for me when I was a kid. You could have this sort of thing. Anyway, they gave me £4,500. A few months later, I received, because they've got a database of all the people who they give credit cards to. They sell this database to other companies. In fact, they give it to a company to sell. So somebody's employed with the information that I've received £4,500 in credit. Someone gets past that information, a company buys it, and then resells that information. So I employ, by having a credit card, someone who makes the credit card and the company who operates the credit card production or credit card lending, the bank, let's say, Royal Bank of Scotland it was, someone's employed doing something connected with me. Then someone's employed selling that information to a company which sells information. Then somebody is employed buying that information in order to send me another credit card application form. So I receive promptly, 6 months later, I received my second credit card application. Now, here we have the beginning of an escalating boom in the economy, because Heiko Ku, speaker at Speaker's Corner, is now not only credit worthy, but he's not only got an A rating, he's got one credit card, he's got a double A rating, because now we're going to give him two credit cards. I, of course, have to engage my brain by signing a piece of paper and going to the post office and sticking it in a box. A week later, or 1 week later, I received my second credit card. I'm very proud. This was some years ago, as I explained. It ended up last Christmas that I had in my wallet a total of 13 credit cards. Now, the largest of these credit cards, of course, they're all the same size, but the amount of money they were lending me. The largest of the credit cards had a total sum of lending of £20,000. Now, let me give you an idea about how this works. Here we have Mr. £20,000, a credit-worthy man by anybody's standards. I'm sure you received letters asking you asking him to get credit cards, of course.
I wrote to the post office, I don't want any more crap.
He didn't want any more crap. These things are crap, you know, there's money in crap, some people say, you see. So the idea that they're crap is actually a mistaken ideology imposed on you by your time in Enver Hoxha's Albania. Now, the reality, of course, is when this man gets his £20,000, let's pretend it's different people here. Let's say 13 of you each. Each of you represents the credit card. So this man gets £20,000. Now, in order, if he borrows the £20,000 and goes and spends it on hot dogs and whores, then this man here comes to the rescue. He's the £10,000 credit card that they gave me second. Now, this man enables me to take out the money I have to pay on this account. That's, let's say, £600 a month to pay the £20,000 credit card, keep them happy. All the while they're contemplating giving me £22,000 or £25,000 or £30,000. This man, meanwhile, is the £10,000 man. Now, I have to pay for every £600 I borrow from him, I have to pay £50 a month in order to keep the £600 a month going. So from this credit card here, I borrow the £50 a month to pay this man here. And this man here is paying this man here. Now, I can't actually pay £50 a month. So I've got another credit card over here where I borrow the £50 from him to pay this man here £5 a month to keep him going. Now, actually, I can't even pay £1 a week. So I borrow the credit from this man to pay the £1 to him to keep the £50 ticking over. And I can't even pay the £1. So I borrow from him 20 pence in the park to keep this man happy, to keep the whole system functioning. Now, if you consider that this actually has happened, not with my credit card alone, the bank who lent me the £20,000 and lent him and lent him and lent him and lent him, each of these personifications of the credit system, themselves have borrowed using the money that I've been paying from one penny until 20,000 pence. They themselves have leveraged up 10 times the amount of money that I have borrowed on the basis that my repayment rate is an asset in their portfolio. In other words, it's a returning income. This man in London has been paying very well, and that's why the whole thing works very well. And ideally, of course, they'll also send you a few letters. Well, they did until a year, until 6 months ago, asking me if I want to buy a house. After all, nothing's safer than houses. Everybody wants the house, have a house. Who doesn't, you know? What are we, Stone Age man? You want to live in a cave or sleep on the streets? That's not for modern man. Modern man needs a modern house, and the houses always go up in price like the, I don't know, like a...
balloon.
Huh? Like a hot air balloon, that's right. Pumped up with hydrogen. And therefore, the problem came that one day, you see, a minute ago, take note, you didn't even notice what happened. Why did the entire world economy collapse? You didn't even notice what happened, did you? Because you were watching me. Because I was talking about property prices. And you were thinking that lovely home. And when I've got a lovely home, I can get a lovely girl. And when I've got a lovely girl, whoa, we'll come my way. Meanwhile, the man who lent me 20 pence to keep the whole thing going has disappeared. Where is he? He was here a minute ago. Now he's gone. So I can't pay this man to get the £1. He can't pay the £1 to pay the £50. He can't pay the £50 to pay the £500. He can't pay the £500 to that Albanian supporter over there. And therefore, the whole system has entered into a very serious crisis, because the man at Speaker's Corner cannot pay. All of a sudden, they turn around and say, there's a small problem with this loan over here. But of course, Gordon Brown and George W. Bush and Barack Obama and the rest of them, they are, and Paul Hank Paulson and the rest of the geniuses of the international financial system and the capitalist system, came on television, and the head of the Bank of England, of course, a well-studied man, you know, didn't go to Oxford and Cambridge for nothing, he turns around and says, everything's fine if only everyone just keeps spending. Just keep spending. After all, look in the newspaper today or the BBC website and you will see Alistair Darling, what a lovely name. Alistair Darling has announced that if only you keep spending, everything will be fine. If tomorrow, instead of sitting at home and thinking about your debts or you might lose your job, you get up off your backside and you go and buy some toys from China, because they're going to give you a discount now.
2.5%.
They reckon 2.5%, but it might be more. They're going to offer you some money, an incentive to buy that toy you wanted for your child. Because after all, someone has to keep the factory in China running. You can't just have a pyramid scheme running all the way around, can you? Therefore, if you don't buy that toy, it's your responsibility that the entire world collapses around your ears. And so, these are the arguments they have been giving. What actually happened is, they turned around and said, well, one black man in Alabama didn't pay on time. And that's why he didn't pay his mortgage on time. So we couldn't value the assets. And therefore, we couldn't value the assets of the company that he was borrowing the money to. Therefore, we couldn't value the assets of the bank. Therefore, we couldn't value the assets of the country. All of a sudden, Iceland's on the edge of starvation. Now, it's quite logical that Iceland would be on the edge of starvation, because they don't really make anything. They catch a couple of fish, they sit in hot water tubs, but otherwise they don't do anything. I was in Berlin a couple of years ago, and I was told by my boss, we've got a very special tour today. I'm a walking tour guide. We're taking around some Icelandic bankers who are planning to invest in Berlin. So I thought, you know, to be fair, quite a lot of educated people, you know, rich people have got a bit of an education. So I thought, well, maybe it might be interesting. You never know, that some of them might be cultured. I've never met Icelandic millionaires, you know. So they came on this huge hotel out the door, and then all smart suits and so on. I thought to myself, I'm not really dressed properly, but never mind. They must understand I'm not a rich man. After all, I wouldn't be a tour guide otherwise. If I was dressed the same as them, maybe they're going to feel inferior. After all, that's the way the world is, isn't it? You know, you don't have expensive clothes for nothing, right? You know, you don't have jewellery shops costing 7 million for a gold bracelet next to a place, you know, for 20 pence for a children's bracelet, when actually most people can't tell the difference. You have to be informed by an expert that that one's worth 1 million and that one's worth 20 pence. So, suddenly we have this rather unfortunate circumstance that the entire world is collapsing around our ears. Did I predict this?
Yes.
Yes, to be fair, the man at Speaker's Corner said, down they go. And so they did. And what we're discovering now is gradually, slowly, out of the drunken haze and the ecstasy-fueled orgy and the property-fueled mania, we discover through the fog the reality of man's condition. The reality of condition in Britain, not the fourth richest country on earth, where every man owns a castle, where every castle is worth 1 million or 2 million, where every man somehow has a huge cash machine, which is the wall of his building. Instead of just going to the cash machine, he touches the wall and it bringeth forth money. Such was the story that we were supposed to believe, and the truth of the matter is, the reason why everybody on the underground reads Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings for the last 5 years is because people believed in fairy stories.
Hocus pocus.
We had a world which believed in fairies.
Yeah, I do.
And the truth of the matter is, you know, I think maybe Bin Laden was invented. In order that they had one of these ghosts, you know. Oh, we've got a monster in a mountain. Whoa. Sounds like Harry Potter. He's got an aeroplane that he can drive with a knife. Whoa. Sounds like magic. He knocks down buildings with his will. Oh, and he's got followers who go wakpa and bang go the buildings. Down go the buildings. War comes about. Infernos explode. Such is the dream we're supposed to believe.
Hollywood.
And these dreams, of course, are gradually fading away into the distance. And man is confronted, which Marx explained, man is confronted by his real condition. What is the real condition? The real condition is the condition of worker, peasant, landlord, capitalist.
Sorry, banker.
Sorry?
I mean bankers.
Bankers, who are the masters of the universe, of course. These geniuses, you see. A few, of course, because it's all this, isn't it? If you're dressed smart, and you've got a smart car you're driving round in, and you live in Mayfair, everyone respects you. If you see someone walking out of the door of a little apartment here in Park Street or Green Street, and they walk out that door, you don't look at them and say, where'd you get your money? No. You know, what do you think we are? Russian proletarians from Svetlovsk? You know, we've been around for longer here. We go down Green Street, we see a man come out with a smart suit and a tie, and we think, for sure, they're a millionaire.
VIP.
For sure, they've got diamonds and gold. They've got wonderful artifacts inside their apartment. They've got servants and maids
who
come and serve them. Butlers, indeed. Butlers. Only the best for them. When they do a crap, it smells of roses.
I thought it was daffodils that smelled of, not roses.
Daffodils, because you were working in the wrong part of that building over there.
That's right. It must have been
I knew a man who worked in Green Street on the buildings. Next to the buildings there, when they were being tarted up by the Irish, by his brothers, they have a pub.
And they never shared money with me either, the David.
You go down the pub and it's got a sign on the door. No dirty clothes or soiled boots. So you can build the building for these people, you can make the riches for them, you can do all the work for them. Meanwhile, they're out living it up on the borrowed money that they've stolen from around the world. From where does the actual wealth come from? What is the distinction between capital as a fictitious number and production as a real commodity to satisfy the mind and the body? That's the question. Where are the goods we are supposed to be covering our losses with? What exactly is it we own in Britain, apart from mortgage debts with the banks? What do we produce in Britain? I understand Honda this morning in Swindon, which, by the way, is not an English company, in case you'd forgotten. Honda in Swindon has decided not to make any cars for a few months. Now, Honda in Swindon is one of the few car-making companies in Britain. So what exactly are we making? Sandwiches?
Sandwiches and coffee.
I got a Jamaican patty yesterday. We're making them.
Biscuits.
Where is that made?
I'm not sure. I think it's made in China.
It could be.
I've got to get new...
Come on, have a look.
It's got specs, sir.
Get your glasses on.
Where's it made?
Sainsbury's. Only the best for you. It doesn't say where they're from.
Keep it in a secret.
Anyway, the ingredients are not coming from London, I tell you that.
Exactly, yeah, well, that's well, yeah.
Maybe one or two, but not many.
What are the ingredients?
Only the chemicals.
What are the ingredients? Yeah. Tastes lovely, though.
It does taste nice, yeah. Well, it's done up with sugar, it's wonderful.
The British had this done up with sugar. You see this typical British mentality. They love their sugar.
Oh, yes.
You know, once upon a time, we didn't have sugar in England, that's why. The sugar came from Jamaica. The sugar was the foundation for the slave trade. The slave trade, the foundation for the banking capital. The banking capital, the foundation for the international commercial system. The commercial system run from London. In this way, we acquired and we expanded our talons, the great British Empire, across the entire world. We were in your country, I bet. We were in his parents' country, I bet. We were in this man's country, I know.
Just visiting.
You know, we were in this man's country long before it became a country. We were there. And we civilized them, brought them to London, educated them, got them to work for us, and stole all the money off them. This is the truth. This is the truth about what the situation is today. And as for you Irish, off to Australia with you. 100 years of that you had.
Free trip.
Free trip, that's right. And you. This man, you know the song?
Didn't even need a passport.
Once in khaki boots, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee Doodle Dum. 500,000 boots went marching through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember, I'm your pal, buddy, can you spare a dime? So it is now.
That's that,
we are returning to a situation whose only parallel is the 1930s, the only historical analogy we have. And he who does not learn from history is bound to repeat it. So we must make a sudden effort. As a people, as working people, as young people, as people from every corner of the world, to interconnect, to bring back the threads, to understand our own history, not the history of Winston Churchill, the man who likes to drop poison gas on the Kurds, but is declared to be the great hero of the Brits.
In 1931.
Not the history of King. I saw on television a program. Once in a while, I put it on. Don't tell the TV licensed man. I turned it on and I saw Prince Charles at 60.
Yeah,
60. What a hero! Well, I understand you. I understand you got some dirty clothes. Yes. I once spilled a coffee on my jacket. We've all got a lot in common, you and I. This is the crap they tell you. And you're supposed to sit there, whoa. Fifth top. I wish I could thank you, man. He's so cool. Sorry?
Is this motor car owned by Germany?
I don't know. We don't know that sort of thing. Who owns, after all? What does it matter? We're all human beings, after all. And this is what they tell you. We're all one human being.
Does
no,
matter.
Barack Obama. Barack Obama's going to save the world. Because he's black. No, he's black. It's true. He's all right. He's half black, but he's black anyway.
He's
more black than they've ever had before. Put it that way, yeah?
Half Muslim.
His middle name is Hussein. I mean, that's... You know what I mean?
And I want to know the...
His first name is nearly Osama.
How did he get that big smile?
What is it? Was it?
Barack.
Barack
Obama.
Barack Osama Hussein. Osama Hussein. I mean, The Americans have elected Osama Hussein.
Yeah, he's the brother of Saddam Hussein.
The world has gone insane. Now, they've elected him, and I noticed the last week I met some Americans, young ones. And there was something good about George Bush. One thing that was good was that in the last couple of years, at Speaker's Corner, the Americans shut up. They didn't say anything. They were like, but we could spot you, you know what I mean? We could spot you anyway. We knew who you were, but you didn't dare say anything. Now, Barack Obama, they're all coming out the woodworms again. They are. All of a sudden, I'm American. I don't believe in racism.
Not anymore.
Well, most of the time.
We go in some of the time. Afghanistan. Now, I didn't agree with Iraq, but Afghanistan, we're going to move our troops. That was George W. Bush. That guy was crazy. Him and Obama, they were the same. But now, we're going to do it right.
Yeah.
And America, we have come a long way. A long path down in Alabama. I have a dream that little George Bush children and little Osama Hussein children will one day walk in harmony together. And yes, I will meet with the Ayatollah. I am prepared to meet with Osama bin Laden.
Really?
I am. Because he's got a lot of oil. And goddamn, we need that oil.
Yeah, cod liver oil, no?
After all, Gordon Brown is his name. I think it's Gordon Brown, that non-entity in number 10. A few weeks ago, did you not see the TV program? It was history. They invited Gordon Brown to Saudi Arabia. King Faisal Abdullah. The first, second, third, God knows. Anyway, one of those guys behind that kit. And that guy invited Gordon Brown, Prime Minister of England, saviour of the world economy, to go to Saudi Arabia. He went, after all, duty calls. He went to Saudi Arabia, and King Faisal thought, now I'm going to have a laugh. Watch this. Michael Jackson, watch this. Sorry. Watch this. And he's got his harem in the background, they're all like that watching. 50 white girls from Edgware Road. You can't see what race they are. Because Islam doesn't recognize race. It's only a religion. Yes. Now, King Faisal says, now shake hands with these 20 men. All known members of Al-Qaeda. And that night they spent the whole night laughing. Oil money, see? We control. We control. America do what we say. We want Osama in the White House. We got Osama Hussein. Yes. Osama Hussein, two in one.
That was the Speaker's Corner show for this week. You can catch our previous shows on speakerscorner.net or tune in again next Tuesday afternoon at 6:30 p.m. on 104.4 Resonance FM. Or you can come down to Speaker's Corner and join us any Sunday afternoon.